head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline and welcome in, as we do every single Monday, win, lose, or draw, the great Browns analyst Nathan Zagura. What's up, buddy?
How you doing, Nick? Good to be talking to you, obviously, after a big win. It's great.
I will say, these are so much more fun after a win. And I'm just, because you had a couple moments yesterday that were so cool and so special to hear you talk about Jimmy. And as you guys were building up to that last play, the potential Hail Mary, you were so effusive in, it had to happen this way, and this is how they're going to win. Was there any part of you that thought, if this doesn't go the way, if Lamar sails one into the arms of Zay Flowers for a touchdown, that you're just going to risk it all and curse every word that you have on the top of your head?
Yeah, honestly, it never even occurred to me. It just had to be. I mean, when Hamilton dropped that ball or Jim knocked it out of his hands, it had to be. I really had kind of a confidence that we were going to win that. You had to win that game. You had to win that game for Jim, and they did, and it made a day that, you know, obviously with a heavy heart and so much sadness around it, it made it, you know, a celebration and cathartic and all of those things. I mean, that day had to end with Kevin Stefanski driving from Huntington Bank Field after the win with Andrew Berry with the game ball out to Hinckley to the Donovan residence to present it to Cheryl and Megan. I mean, and that's what I said. I think at one point I said, you can't even write stories this good, folks. It's just what it had to be. I mean, we got field goals kissing off the uprights. We got dropped interceptions by Kyle Hamilton on what would have been probably the easiest interception of his career. It just was, there was too much magic. There was too much balls getting lost in the sun in late October on the shores of Lake Erie. I mean, things that you can't explain other than obviously sometimes it's what it is. It was the divine intervention of Jim Donovan and for the team that he loved, getting a win that was such a healing win on so many levels for a town that had been sad, a town that had been, you know, obviously disappointed with the way the football team had been. It was perfect. It was perfect, and it was as it needed to be.
Did you have Jameis throwing for 300 yards in a win versus Baltimore on your bingo card yesterday?
I mean, look, I really thought we were going to win. Like, I just knew it in my head. We had to. So I thought we were going to win. And I did think we were going to, I thought we were going to throw the ball all over the yard against them. I mean, statistically, they were the worst pass defense in the league coming into it. And then we're going to be without their top two corners. You know, talking to some of the people from the Ravens that I knew, they were very concerned about our ability to throw the football. And, you know, so yeah, I'm not surprised. Jameis, last time he was a full-time starter, Jameis led the league through for 5,100 yards. So there's no doubt that he can spin it and get the ball down the field. And I thought it was great to see, you know, Judy and Tillman, who had a monster game, got in the end zone for the first time. Elijah Moore had a great game and was used, you know, much more like the wide receiver I believe that he can be. So all of it added up. Chief got the first touchdown. It was perfect. Over 300 yards, three touchdowns. You know, this offense, and it looked, people would say, oh, what was the, it looked a lot like the offense did last year when, you know, it was Joe Flacco in the sense of schematically, there were not a lot of differences from what we would think of as a, you know, a Kevin Stefanski offense. And what we saw was a quarterback who was able to execute that at a high level and an offense that was really humming. 400 yards, you know, 29 points, almost got to 30. It was great. Great to see. Great win.
Nathan, what are the most repeatable things from yesterday? Meaning, like, what are the keys to repeating that so that you can put Jameis into that position more often than not going forward?
The protection. I thought, you know, with DeJuan at left tackle, with Wyatt Teller back at right guard, I thought that the offensive line did a great job. I thought from a pass protection standpoint, it was the best that we have seen this year. And if you give Jameis time from a late clean pocket, he will make teams pay. So I think that is something that certainly if that line can do that week in and week out, Conklin's playing great. You know, Joel's playing well. Posick is back to the form that we've come to expect. It was awesome to have Wyatt back. And then I thought DeJuan looked very good at left tackle. I was talking with Joe Thomas actually earlier today, and he said, I thought in his pass sets, he looked fantastic for a guy that had played right tackle and was very excited about his future potentially at left tackle here for the Cleveland Browns. So Yeah, I think that is probably the biggest key. You're seeing a receiver and Cedric Tillman playing with confidence, Elijah Moore, all of those guys. They're capable of getting open. There's no doubt. And you just need somebody who can not only see it, but is willing sometimes to throw the ball with anticipation down the field in those tight windows. And much like Joe Flacco, Jameis Winston clearly was willing to do that. We saw it on his first completion of David Njoku's, a ball that, you know, might not have been thrown earlier this season, and it was thrown for a big completion.
Nathan, is one game enough to see DeJuan there going forward, or do you think there's still a chance we see Jed back out there at left tackle soon?
You know, those are decisions that I am not going to ultimately make, but I'm a big DeJuan Jones guy, just flat out. Guy was on the all-rookie team last year, was one of the best pass-blocking right tackles in the league. He had kind of nagging injury that was bothering him earlier this year, and he didn't quite have the movement, but you can see that he's already starting to get back into a little bit of a better position there. So I like him. I think you talk about who he is, to me, a potential very long-term solution. He's only in the second year of his four-year rookie contract. But, I'm Team DeJuan. Get him on the field. I would love to see what he can do.
I'm right there with you, buddy. Nathan Zegura on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline talking the Browns win over the Ravens there. David Njoku had a sideline catch called back. And I guess I'll start here. Do you think inevitably they got it right?
Yeah, and I know people said, why didn't you challenge it? Because basically the replay guy's already like, I've looked at it, and it was so quick I was able to do it. So initially I wasn't sure if his right foot was down, but then it was clear his right foot was in fact down as well as his left foot. But when he went to the ground, the ball was bobbling and moving, and that's why it was ruled incomplete. So I do think they got that one right. Sure. I don't necessarily love the rule, but they got it right.
That's where I was going to go, because it just feels like the amount of certainty that you have to have a catch, like it just feels ridiculous that we've over legislated catches to this point. Do you think pulling back some of those things, like basically, it's almost like once you've cleared the end zone, it's a touchdown no matter what happens afterwards, or you clear the plane. Do you think that should be more in line with what we do with catches, or do you think that would only muck it up more?
No, I think that, you know, there are definitely a couple of rules they could do. I think the fact if you fumble the ball at the 1 yard line and it goes through the end zone, that the other team gets it as a touchback, to me is crazy. Just put it back at the 1 yard line. I think that it's wild that if you're in the end zone facing away from the quarterback and you catch a ball over your shoulder and tiptoe both toes in at the back of the end zone and then fall onto the top of your foot out of bounds, that's a catch and a touchdown. But if you are facing the quarterback with your back to the end line and you catch the ball on your tippy toes, but then your foot steps down and your heel touches out of bounds, somehow that's out of bounds. I don't get it. So there are certain things they should just make it easy and obvious. I think that if you, in real time, what everybody was looking for with the David Njoku one was his feet. And so once they saw that, they're like, oh yeah, but if you have to complete the catch. I have no problem with that whatsoever. And I think even in the end zone, had that been looked at, they would have ultimately ruled that one incomplete. But yeah, you want it to be as simple as it can be.
Nathan, looking at the Browns defense there, how would you grade out what they did against Baltimore? A lot of pressure, and in the end, you still gave up, almost 300 passing yards to Lamar?
I thought they played well, honestly. You know, they were able to get them off the field on third downs. That was what I thought was one of the big keys in this game, was how would the Browns be able to do against Lamar and the Ravens on third down, because that's where that team had been so dangerous coming into it. And if you look at the final numbers, the Browns themselves were 8 of 15. They held the Ravens to just 2 of 10 and then 0 of 2 on fourth down. That's how you win that game. That's where you won it. So you're going to give up yards to this team. Lamar Jackson is otherworldly good. I mean, he threw 289, two touchdowns, ran for 46 yards. His ability to buy time and then just with a flick of the wrist get the ball out is unparalleled. He really should have been over 300 yards. You think about Bateman losing the one in the sun. Had another shot probably for Zay Flowers on a busted coverage that he just missed him by a foot. If he hits that, that's a walk-in touchdown. So you're going to give up yards to a team like that. I thought you bend, but you didn't break, and that was the difference in this game. You're forcing them, obviously, to take field goals, and you get them to go 1 for 2 on field goals. That's the key. You're not going to stop that team with Lamar and with Derrick Henry and Zay Flowers and Mark Andrews, all that. You're not going to stop them, but if you can force them and win those four-point plays and force them to go for threes instead of sevens, that's winning, and that's how you won this game.
Cedric Tillman, 99 yards, 2 tutties. Jerry Jeudy, 79 yards. Elijah Moore, 85 yards. Njoku, 61 yards and a touchdown there. in terms of those that should you just rock with those core four going forward, and,
yeah.
and that basically one game of Jameis proves that maybe who's throwing the ball makes the difference with those wide receivers.
Yeah, it's great to see Cedric Tillman kind of really take that next step and build off of last week's game when he had 8 catches, and this week it's 7 for 99 and 2 touchdowns. So for a second, it was 7 for 100, and they changed the yardage total. I don't know how, but they ended up taking a yard away from him. But I thought Elijah Moore looked great. He had the 8 catches, huge one on third down on that final drive. Jerry Jeudy was explosive, 5 for 79, was showing that yards after the catch ability. Chief winning his one-on-ones again, played great. Yeah, that's I like that because you have a mixture of size with Tillman, and you saw his ability to use his body, but then also run away from people, as we saw at Tennessee. That's what he did so well there, averaging 17 yards a catch. Physical. Elijah Moore was just a master route runner in this game, creating separation, and he was getting anticipatory throws from Jameis. Jeudy gives you vertical slot. He's able to win on the outside, and then Chief is a mismatch. So yeah, I think it actually is a pretty good quartet. If Cedric Tillman keeps going at the rate that he is finally showing the last two games, I'm very excited about what he can do, you know, for this future. And then that receiving room looks all of a sudden a heck of a lot different.
Looking to the defensive side of the ball, the injuries, obviously the big concern. JOK carted off. He's okay, thank God. And then Obviously Denzel, concussion number 6 here. How does this situation play out from here with Denzel, knowing that that is a big number, the 6 concussion?
Yeah, I have no idea how that plays out. And obviously you put Denzel Ward's health before you put it, you know, Denzel Ward, the Cleveland Brown. I certainly hope that, you know, that he is okay. And we'll get updates on that, I'm sure. But yeah, I'm concerned for him just as a guy I've gotten to know throughout his entire career here with the Cleveland Browns. He's playing fantastic football. Almost had a pick yesterday. You know, came in the game leading the league in passes defense. He's just been spectacular. And so I hope that, you know, he is okay. He loves to play football, so I hope he's able to continue to do so.
If either injury costs you, whether it's JOK or Denzel, costs you them for, you know, a couple weeks at a time, how does that change the ceiling of the defense?
I mean, JOK, 3 tackles for a loss, a sack yesterday. He's everywhere, and he did that in limited time. I thought Mahmoud Diabate played fantastic when called upon. Hopefully he'll get Jordan Hicks back. But, yeah, JOK is our ultimate playmaker. And then Denzel's been the best, one of the best corners in the league playing, I think, at an all-pro level. So those would be massive losses, massive losses. Now you're going to play a Chargers team this week that is not, you know, they don't have that number one receiver. They don't throw the ball all over the yard, you know, as well as the Ravens do, for example. And they don't have a Derrick Henry, although J.K. Dobbins has been very good for them. And then hopefully you got time between that one. You get the bye week after that, that you could be, you know, full strength for that final 8 games if you're able to, you know, string some wins together here and get yourself right back in this thing.
Am I crazy to think Diabate and Winston Reed have, like, real potential, like potential potential?
No, definitely not in the case of Diabate. I like Winston Reed a lot, too. And they clearly like him. They let, you know, Tony Fields go because that was Winston Reed's spot. There's no doubt Diabate does. He is a dude. He plays hard. He plays physically. He's got great instincts. He's getting better in coverage. Yeah, Mahmoud Diabate is a real player, I think, for this Cleveland Browns team. And I thought he was great in this game. Probably he had a sack at one point. They ended up taking it away from him and giving it to Za'Darius Smith, who I thought was brilliant in this game. 9 pressures, according to Pro Football Focus. But Diabate had 9 tackles, a pass defense, a tackle for a loss. I mean, he was all over the place. So I thought he did a fantastic job.
So you can decline if it's still a little too much to talk about. But I obviously, as yesterday was about Jimmy, I did want to kind of ask you, like, just from your time in him and working with him, if there was a favorite moment that kind of come to mind that you might be willing to share.
Honestly, it's the thing that I will remember the most. I mean, he is a broadcasting idol to me. I became fortunate to become great friends with him. The thing that I'll remember the most, though, was, you know, getting to spend 9 days under one roof with him at the Greenbrier this summer. And just getting to live with him. And, you know, at the time we knew it was special. We didn't know, obviously, it was as special as it was, that it was not something we'd be able to repeat, you know, perhaps next summer. But just his love for what he did, this is all he wanted to do. I mean, when he was a kid, he would take a tape recorder and sit in the stands at the Boston Garden and do the hockey games and do the Celtics games and send them to Johnny Most, and who would give him feedback. You know, this is what he wanted. This was his lifelong passion, and he cared about, you know, being the voice of the Browns deeply, cared about his family deeply, cared about his friends deeply, and he was just, he's a universally loved guy. I mean, there are so many just moments, but if you're saying like a couple things that I remember the most was just how much the Pittsburgh Steelers game, when he came back, smashed the guitar, and came back in the booth, and they won, and got the game ball from Stefanski in the locker room. What a special day that was for him. And then, well, I'll never forget the Jets game, where we clinched, went back to the playoffs, his call, he was there, he was so excited, and I have one of my, you know, most prized possessions is a photo taken of Jim and I pregame before that one that I blew up, and I made a canvas in my house, and I made one for him as well, and wrote a nice kind of thank you note, and just, you know, let him know how I felt about him and how honored I was to work with him last year. So those are probably some of just like the actual kind of moments in time, but really just getting to live with him for 9 days this summer was something I will never ever forget.
Well, Nathan, two of my favorite things about Jim as a, you know, as a listener of growing up with him on the call, were his passion and how fair and honest he always was, even when it's tough to be honest. I think those are two things you do really, really well. So thank you for thank sharing you, that, bud. Thank you for yesterday. That was a lot of fun, man. And that I said this earlier today, and I, you know, yesterday are the reasons why we sports. Yesterday makes all this stuff,
totally,
having that happen and everything within 24 hours. And I appreciate you, buddy.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you for those words. That means a lot to me. It's a tough balance, but it's something that Jim did perfectly. We had on Browns Daily, we did a Jim Donovan tribute episode today, and we had, you know, from Joe Thomas to Phil Dawson, and everybody talked about one of the things that he was able to do so well was be positive, be energetic, love this team, love the fans, and then also be honest about what was going on, but do so in a very fair way. And it's a tough balance. That's something I try to emulate, you know, of his in the booth. And yeah, he is going to be missed. He is so special. And again, there's no doubt that he was played a hand in what happened on Sunday. And as I said, it had to be. That just had to be the outcome. And thank goodness it was.
Yeah, you do it damn well, buddy. We appreciate you sending everybody my love, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Nathan Zagura there, Browns analyst on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Nick Wilson back on Afternoon Drive. Great stuff with Nathan Zagura there. There's a lot there to talk about where we kind of left it with Nathan, but I'll say his analysis of DeJuan Jones at left tackle is 100% of where I've been. And it's less about DeJuan and it's more about Jet, because I don't know how in a locker room full, I don't think they hate Jet. I don't want to paint it like that. But in a locker room full of professionals, I don't know how you trot a guy out there every single week that it is obvious, it is clear and obvious he doesn't play through the whistle. And that's not me saying it, because, you know, when we talked about this last week and I said the easiest victory for Kevin Stefanski to have is to bench Jed Wills. And they have painted this as Jed was hurt last week. This team has lied to me once. I'm assuming they could lie here. I have to trust them as far as I can trust them. I don't really believe it. I think they understood that you can't win if there are several people on your team not playing at a high level, and not playing up to their paycheck. And Jed Wills was no longer, oh, that 10th pick, and he's going to grow into who he's. No, he's a fifth-year veteran making $15 million this year guaranteed. And so at some point I became, I'll take somebody with 60% of the talent that plays through the whistle. Because you can't be a veteran team with that much money on offense and have the offense let you down time and time again. Not when it comes to effort. Not when it comes to when Bill Callahan, I think it was 2 years ago, going into his fourth year, so it must have been last year, saying, yeah, we just need him to play through the whistle. That's his O-line coach saying, I don't trust this guy to play for 3 full seconds or 4 full seconds. So am I surprised it was DeJuan that pulled the sword from the stone? A little bit, because I didn't think they'd ever put him over there. I thought when they had ample opportunity to put DeJuan on the left side of the line, and they didn't, I thought that was our answer on whether they thought DeJuan Jones could be a left tackle. And out of necessity, they might have stumbled on to something that really, really works. Because one, it allows you to have Jack Conklin on the right side, and Jack is a prodigious right tackle talent. And two, DeJuan is on in what, year two of a four-year deal, which is a rookie contract for a fourth-round pick, which means you have probably another year before you have to pay that guy. That gives you more than enough time to evaluate him as a left tackle and as just a talent in general. But man, it was tough not to watch DeJuan Jones play. And I know he had, what was that? Was that a false start early? But like, so it wasn't perfect. And I think with DeJuan, I think DeJuan is one of the guys that does better with being coached as hard as humanly possible. So I think that's why you heard Kevin Stefanski today come out and be like, it wasn't perfect, but it was a nice first attempt there by DeJuan. He also might just be protecting the feeling of Jed Wills, who might not understand yet that he has been replaced at left tackle. But if they put Jed out there again at left tackle, guys, it's on them. It really is. And you don't ever wish for somebody to be Wally Pipless, and I think Jed is going to have a career in the NFL as long as he wants one. He'll be like the Juwan Taylors. He'll be like every one of those guys, like Trent Browns, because he is a massive human being. Maybe somebody will even try him at right tackle. Maybe that becomes better for him. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe the Browns bring him back next year as the right tackle. Don't, but who knows? But like, I don't know how you watch yesterday's game and come away with any other interpretation of what you saw as give DeJuan Jones the rest of the season to continue building on habits at left tackle. Now, I don't know DeJuan could have done this 7 weeks ago. I think it has been underreported that DeJuan clearly wasn't ready or clearly wasn't where he needed to be with that knee injury. He also had knee surgery late last year, and it is probably why I gave him the out. I really did, for being pretty overweight going into camp. If your knee isn't right, it's hard to drop that weight, especially if you're a young player, especially if you're coming off a year where I think you surprised the NFL and maybe it really got high on the hog. There, we said it again, on some of the compliments that you got. That being said, it's open and shut. DeJuan Jones, Wally Pipp, Jed Wills yesterday. And if the Browns don't see that, we'll probably have some issues going forward. But I think yesterday, you know, we talked a lot about, to start the show, like how much of yesterday is bankable. Can we just start with this? The young players really did show up and play well. Nathan mentioned Diabate, the middle linebacker. It's a really nice player. I even think that Winston Reed kid, again, he's kind of like Diabate was last year, of a kid that you're just like, hey, that's just a good football player. But I think even more impressive than that was the wide receivers. And whether it was Cedric Tillman, who was open all day long, whether it was Jerry Jeudy, who kind of made plays. And honestly, guys, the more success you have, now it's when the Browns finally passed the evaluation stage of the offense. They have. So now it is, can you start to, you know, kind of marry things like pre-snap motion more to get opportunities to get Jerry Jeudy the ball when he's got nothing between him and the end zone? And the same thing with Elijah Moore. Those are your two guys with true game-breaking speed. Cedric Tillman also is going to get some touchdowns here. But like, that's like the next step of this if you're going to build on this, because eventually the interceptions are going to come with Jameis, and you need to offset that with the adequate number of touchdowns, basically. So that's what that last touchdown play gave me hope for, that kind of over-the-top, just run it into the end zone. I think that's available for any one of the three best wide receivers. And that's only going to make David Njoku that much more dangerous as a guy who is still a really dangerous threat, but maybe isn't the speedster that he was 8 years ago when he came into the NFL. And that brings us to whether it is DeJuan Jones, whether it is Cedric Tillman and Jerry Jeudy and Elijah Moore, even Njoku, who's still relatively young. The next 9 games are about making this thing look as tempting as you possibly can to any quarterback that might be available in the NFL. Naturally, that takes us to the eyes of, like, veterans. Like, a week ago, or yeah, I think it was a week ago, Albert Breer was on with us and mentioned the name Matt Stafford. And I'll be honest with you, Matt Stafford isn't Matt Stafford anymore. Matt is a 36, 37-year-old version of himself. He's still good enough for you to win a lot of football games with. And I think we've oversimplified the quarterback conversation to such a bizarre degree. The next quarterback probably isn't going to be just one guy. The evolution of quarterback in Cleveland is probably going to have to be a multi-step process. And I don't know that you have the timeline like with Kansas City. Kansas City went, they traded for Alex Smith in 2013, and then they didn't address it again until the 2017 draft, which meant that they just gave Alex Smith 13, 14, 15, and 16 to be the quarterback and be as good as they possibly could. And the reason why that was intelligent, they knew they probably weren't going to win a Super Bowl with Alex, but it allowed them to sustain winning. And I believe those first 4 years with Alex Smith, they went 3-for-4 in the playoffs and they didn't have a losing season. I don't know you have the time to do that. I also don't know it's prudent to do a Kirk Cousins and a Michael Penix Jr., which Atlanta did this last year. But I think if we're starting to, whether this involves Jameis or not, I think yesterday proved the idea of you've got a lot of young talent around the quarterback position. And the more that you can showcase those guys over the next 9 games, the more likely it is that somebody who might be an outgoing quarterback, Matt Stafford's the only guy I can think about right now, but any situation where there's a young quarterback getting ready to usurp or to knock off a veteran quarterback, I don't know you'll have the space to get them. I don't know you'll have the assets to get them. In the end, you still might end up with the best chance to get a starting quarterback, and so you just take the guy this April and they kind of move from there. But I think so much of why, like, Ayuk didn't want to come here. He didn't think he was going to get the touches necessary to get the yardage and get the next contract after this next contract. He didn't believe in the quarterback situation. I think there's now a lot of evidence to show, even in one game, that the situation around the quarterback is going to give whatever quarterback steps in here, even if it's Jameis, even if it's Matt Stafford, which still feels far-fetched. Even if it's a rookie, let's say Shedeur Sanders, that'd go a long way to kind of make a Deion Sanders realize what's possible here instead of steering his kid away. Or it's going to make a veteran looking for that next spot, maybe that last stop, it's going to make this space a lot more interesting and a lot more doable. And a lot more attractive. 216-474-0092. Did yesterday change your opinion on some of the young guys on this roster? I am eyes open with DeJuan Jones here on out. Same thing with Tillman. Same thing with Judy. Same thing with Elijah Moore. And one NFL quarterback proves honesty is not always the best policy. 92.3 The Fan. Which yesterday, actually not that. So Saturday, Ness informed me that that is when her parents' trick-or-treating was going to be, was at 2 o'clock on a Sunday. Now, I'll be honest with you. I am better than most when it comes to communicating my marriage. I'm still not flawless. So I thought to myself, well, clearly she knows the Browns game is on. You know, I'm not going to be able to go there because I got to watch the game. I can't kind of have to watch it. And so Sunday, we were sitting there and we're kind of getting ready. And she's like, why don't you have your shoes on? I was like, oh. And then I did say the thing you shouldn't say, which is I thought it was common sense that I wouldn't be going. That was not smart. That was a tiger got out of the cage, unintentionally insulting my wife. She thought it was intentional. And I spent the next 8 or 9 hours paying for it. So to the good people of Rootstown, Ohio, please move your trick-or-treating. You're killing me. You're going to get me divorced. What are you doing? Why are you doing this to me? It's the same time every year, and every time it's during a Browns game. Anyways, that's what I was contending with. The only thing I didn't think about during yesterday's Browns game, the only thing, was, how much am I going to pay for this when she comes home? It turns out, until we went to bed. And then she rolled over, and she was trying to be cute, and she's like, I think I'm done punishing you. And I was like, okay, well, now I'm going to sleep. So, like, all the things you wanted to talk about previously, it's not like I'm going to be like, well, let me download all of my day with you right now. Not just talking about this, I might be back in Dutch. So 216-474-0092. Anybody else have that problem? Because I'll be honest with you, I would love nothing more than to go trick-or-treating with my kiddos. We did it Saturday. But, like, come on. The Bronx keep the lights on. Let's think about this one. Also, if you know Vanessa, do not tell her we talked about this. Be cool, baby, okay? Now, while we have that conversation, speaking of be cool, I really don't know how to talk about this next one because I can't believe somebody said it into a microphone. Like, I'm a little torn here because on one hand, I am team honesty. I like when players say real things into a microphone because the PR-ification of sports has taken some of the fun out of this. Right? Like, it's not fireable that Kevin Stefanski makes me fall asleep in his press conferences, but it does annoy me. Right? Like, in the end, if you win enough football games, you can be Belichick and you can say we're on to Cincinnati as much as you'd like. It's just if you could give me a little seasoning there, right? I don't like bland food. I don't like bland press conferences. So, on one hand, that is my general ethos about press conferences. Teams have ruined it. PRification, people being afraid of fans and being afraid of words into a microphone affecting sales is kind of the bane of my existence. And then there's Colts quarterback Anthony Richardson, who came out of the game, I want to say about halfway through the game in yesterday's loss by the Colts, and he was asked about this. And he gave an answer that, I'll be honest with you, team honesty loves, team, what are you doing, does not love.
Man, tired. I ain't gonna lie. That was a lot of running right there that I did, and I don't think I was gonna be able to go that next play. So I just needed a break right there.
I don't know I've ever identified with a quarterback more in my life, right? Like, even like, and Anthony is at this point, he's got a rocket for an arm. He is still a guy who has to make plays with his legs to kind of counteract with some accuracy issues and some immaturity. So if you kind of saw that game, Anthony was running, I would say, a significant amount yesterday. I don't know that it's altogether that smart to be like, man, I was just tired. Like, I don't know that this, I think this gets you benched in college, where, like, nobody pays attention to the little fiefdoms outside of the fiefdom and the media that you exist in. Meaning, like, what happens in Clemson usually stays in Clemson. What happens in Gainesville usually stays in Gainesville. So if you are, unless you, like, I don't know, a felony, or unless you're like Dabo Sweeney, who just perpetually everybody knows, like, he's going to say something stupid. Just keep the mics rolling. Pretty much, like, the amount of dumb things said by people and players and coaches in college, there's just too much to keep up with. You can't do this in the NFL. And I don't know, I really don't know how Anthony Richardson thought this one was going to go. Hey, Nick, you took off and you only did till 6 o'clock, and then you told the board op just to flip it over to the Infinity Sports Network. What was that about? I was just tired. I'll be honest with you, those first 4 hours, they were taxing. I didn't get my cardio in this week. I was kind of hungry. Like, I love the honesty. Like, I honestly, love it. Maybe this is the time you choose to lie a little bit. And also, Shane Steichen was asked, by the way, about basically, have you made a decision at quarterback given Anthony's statement? And he said, Everything's under the microscope, which is a really nice way of saying, I have to decide how pissed I am about this and whether I'm willing to forgive this guy. Let's just say this. This is the Jed Wills thing. I don't know why it took anybody in Cleveland 4.5 years to realize if a guy doesn't play through the whistle, don't play him. It's not that hard. That's not discipline. That's not Tommy Toughnuts talking here. All right, that's just basic common sense. All right, there's like three or four things in the NFL. Guys, I'll be honest with you. Most players don't care what you're accused of off the field if you're good at football. They don't. I know that sucks, but if you can help a guy make more money, he'll do the deal. As people love to say, the Faustian bargain. They'll do those deals with the devil all the time. The one thing you can't do as a pro is be like, man, I just don't know. I just didn't feel it in that moment. You know, I'm a vibes guy, and it's a little winded, and I thought to myself, I'm going to go ahead and take myself out on this play. I'm just going to regroup and recollect for the next series. This is the one of the unforgivables. So if Shane Steichen, this is actually my official prediction. I'm decreeing this now on air. If Shane Steichen's, I don't want to add an S there. If Shane Steichen allows this goober to play next year, next week, that's the one I was going for. If he allows him to play next week, Shane Steichen will never make it in Indianapolis. This is dummy 101. Hey, guy took himself out of the game because he's tired. Cool. I'm going to take him out of the next game. You can put him back in the week after. You can. But you can't let a professional run off the sideline and be like, cardio, right? You can't let the face of a franchise do this. Like, this is no longer an Anthony Richardson issue. This is a, do you have any self-respect as an NFL head coach? Like, this is, can you go into that locker room? And can you tell yourself and can you tell them, we're putting you in the best position to win as long as we're not winded? No, you can't. And by the way, this, because Jim Irsay is just another Jimmy Haslam. It is just all about Jim Irsay out there in Indianapolis. Jim, this is the time you listen to the coaches. Yeah. This is the first time in the history of football, including any time that I've been around it, any time that I played it, that I've ever heard of anybody going, I just need a couple snaps off because cardio. Just, I really feel like somebody else who's less winded could do a better job until I get my lungs, you know, beneath me and ready to go. 216-474-0092. I will say, the only thing about this that shocked me, other than how dumb it is that it didn't come from the mouth of a Browns player, because we have heard some stuff that is just under this, but never this dumb. It's good that somebody else did something this dumb. JP joins me as co-host next on 92.3 The Fan.